Introduction to SQ. Ursula K. Le Guin has twice won both the Nebula and Hugo Awards, in 1969 for The Left Hand of Darkness, and in 1975 for The Dispossessed. Her other awards are too numerous to list. While one doesn't automatically associate humor with Ms. Le Guin, one tends instead to think of the strength of steel, paradoxically combined with the delicacy of poetry. She displayed a delightful sense of humor in the introductions to her stories in The Wind's 12 Quarters. In SQ, she again reveals this side of her talent. But the story is far more than an amusing tale. It is a devastating portrait of the political mind, fanatic in its quest for power. SQ by Ursula K. Le Guin. I think what Dr. Speakey has done is wonderful. He is a wonderful man. I believe that. I believe that people need beliefs. If I didn't have my belief, I really don't know what would happen. And if Dr. Speakey hadn't truly believed in his work, he couldn't possibly have done what he did. Where would he have found the courage? What he did proves his genuine sincerity. There was a time when a lot of people tried to cast doubts on him. They said he was seeking power. That was never true. From the very beginning, all he wanted was to help people and make a better world. The people who called him a power seeker and a dictator were just the same ones who used to say that Hitler was insane and Nixon was insane and all the world leaders were insane and the arms race was insane and our misuse of natural resources was insane and the whole world civilization was insane and suicidal. They were always saying that. And they said it about Dr. Speakey. But he stopped all that insanity, didn't he? So he was right all along, and he was right to believe in his beliefs. I came to work for him when he was named the chief of the Psychometric Bureau. I used to work at the UN, and when the world government took over the New York UN building, they transferred me up to the 35th floor to be the head secretary in Dr. Speakey's office. I knew already that it was a position of great responsibility, and I was quite excited the whole week before my new job began. I was so curious to meet Dr. Speakey, because, of course, he was already famous. I was there right at the dot of 9 on Monday morning, and when he came in, it was so wonderful. He looked so kind. You could tell that the weight of his responsibilities was always on his mind, but he looked so healthy and positive. And there was a bounce in his step. I used to think it was as if he had rubber balls in the toes of his shoes. He smiled and shook my hand and said in such a friendly, confident voice, "And you must be Mrs. Smith. I've heard wonderful things about you. We're going to have a wonderful team here, Mrs. Smith." Later on, he called me by my first name, of course. That first year, we were mostly busy with information. The World Government Presidium and all the member states had to be fully informed about the nature and purpose of the SQ test before the actual implementation of its application could be eventualized. That was good for me, too, because in preparing all that information, I learned all about it myself. Often, taking dictation, I learned about it from Dr. Speakey's very lips. By May, I was enough of an expert that I was able to prepare the basic SQ information pamphlet for publication, just from Dr. Speakey's notes. It was such fascinating work. As soon as I began to understand the SQ test plan, I began to believe in it. That was true of everybody in the office and in the bureau. Dr. Speakey's sincerity and scientific enthusiasm were infectious. Right from the beginning, we had to take the test every quarter, of course, and some of the secretaries used to be nervous before they took it, but I never was. It was so obvious that the test was right. If you scored under 50, it was nice to know that you were sane. But even if you scored over 50, that was fine, too, because then you could be helped. And anyway, it is always best to know the truth about yourself. As soon as the information service was functioning smoothly, Dr. Speakey transferred the main thrust of his attention to the implementation of evaluator training and planning for the structurization of the cure centers. Only he changed the name to SQ Achievement Centers. It seemed a very big job. Even then, we certainly had no idea how big the job would finally turn out to be. As he said at the beginning, we were a very good team. Dr. Speakey valued my administrative abilities and put them to good use. There wasn't a single slacker in the office. We all worked very hard, and there were always rewards. I remember one wonderful day I had accompanied Dr. Speakey to the meeting of the board of the Psychometric Bureau. The emissary from the state of Brazil announced that his state had adopted the Bureau recommendations for universal testing. We had known that was going to be announced, but then the delegate from Libya and the delegate from China announced that their state had adopted the test, too. Oh, Dr. Speakey's face was just like the sun for a minute, just shining. I wish I could remember exactly what he said, especially to the Chinese delegate, because, of course, China was a very big state, and its decision was very influential. Unfortunately, I do not have his exact words, because I was changing the tape in the recorder. He said something like, "Gentlemen, this is a historic day for humanity." Then he began to talk at once about the effective implementation of the application centers, where people would take the test, and the achievement centers, where they would go if they scored over 50, and how to establish the test administrations and evaluations infrastructure on such a large scale, and so on. He was always modest and practical. He would rather talk about doing the job than talk about what an important job it was. He used to say, "Once you know what you are doing, the only thing you need to think about is how to do it." I believe that is deeply true. From then on, we could hand over the information program to a sub-department and concentrate on how to do it. Those were exciting times. So many states joined the plan one after another. When I think of all we had to do, I wonder that we didn't all go crazy. Some of the office staff did fail their quarterly test, in fact, but most of us working in the executive office with Dr. Speakey remained quite stable, even when we were on the job all day and half the night. I think his presence was an inspiration. He was always calm and positive. Even when we had to arrange things like training 113,000 Chinese evaluators in 3 months, "You can always find out how if you just know the why," he would say, and we always did. When you think back over it, it really is quite amazing what a big job it was, so much bigger than anybody, even Dr. Speakey, had realized it would be. It just changed everything. You only realize that when you think back to what things used to be like. Can you imagine? When we began planning universal testing for the state of China, we only allowed for 1,100 achievement centers with 6,800 staff. It really seems like a joke, but it is not. I was going through some of the old files yesterday, making sure everything is in order, and I found the first China implementation plan with those figures written down in black and white. I believe the reason why even Dr. Speakey was slow to realize the magnitude of the operation was that even though he was a great scientist, he was also an optimist. He just kept hoping against hope that the average scores would begin to go down, and this prevented him from seeing that universal application of the SQ test was eventually going to involve everybody, either as inmates or as staff. When most of the Russian and all the African states had adopted the recommendations and were busy implementing them, the debates in the General Assembly of the World Government got very excited. That was the period when so many bad things were said about the test and about Dr. Speakey. I used to get quite angry reading the World Times reports of the debates. When I went as his secretary with Dr. Speakey to General Assembly meetings, I had to sit and listen in person to people insulting him personally, casting aspersions on his motives and questioning his scientific integrity and even his sincerity. Many of those people were very disagreeable and obviously unbalanced, but he never lost his temper. He would just stand up and prove to them again that the SQ test did actually, literally, scientifically show whether the testee was sane or insane. And the results could be proved, and all psychometrists accepted them. So the test ban people couldn't do anything but shout about freedom and accuse Dr. Speakey and the Psychometric Bureau of trying to turn the world into a huge insane asylum. He would always answer quietly and firmly, asking them how they thought a person could be free if he suffered under a delusional system, or was prey to compulsions and obsessions, or could not endure contact with reality. How could those who lacked mental health be truly free? What they called freedom might well be a delusional system with no contact with reality. In order to find out, all they had to do was to become testees. "Mental health is freedom," he said. "Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty," they say, And now we have an infallible watchdog to watch for us. The SQ test. Only the testees can be truly free. There really was no answer they could make to that, except illogical and vulgar accusations, which did not convince the delegates who had invited them to speak. Sooner or later, the delegates, even from member states where the test ban movement was strong, would volunteer to take the SQ test to prove that their mental health was adequate to their responsibilities. Then the ones that passed the test and remained in office would begin working for universal application in their home state. The riots and demonstrations and things like the burning of the Houses of Parliament in London, in the state of England, where the Northern European SQ Center was housed, and the Vatican Rebellion and the Chilean H-bomb were the work of insane fanatics appealing to the most unstable elements of the populace. Such fanatics, as Dr. Speakey and Dr. Waltraud pointed out in their memorandum to the Presidium, deliberately aroused and used the proven instability of the crowd, mob psychosis. The only response to mass delusion of that kind was immediate implementation of the testing program in the disturbed states and immediate amplification of the asylum program. That was Dr. Speakey's own decision, by the way, to rename the SQ Achievement Centers asylums. He took the word right out of his enemies' mouths. He said, "An asylum means a place of shelter, a place of cure. Let there be no stigma attached to the word insane, to the word asylum, to the words insane asylum. No, for the asylum is the haven of mental health, the place of cure, where the anxious gain peace, where the weak gain strength, where the prisoners of inadequate reality assessment win their way to freedom. Proudly let us use the word asylum. Proudly let us go to the asylum to work to regain our own God-given mental health, or to work with others less fortunate to help them win back their own inalienable right to mental health. And let one word be written large over the door of every asylum in the world. Welcome." Those words are from his great speech at the General Assembly on the day World Universal Application was decreed by the Presidium. Once or twice a year I listen to my tape of that speech, although I am too busy ever to get really depressed. Now and then I feel the need of a tiny pick-me-up, and so I play that tape. It never fails to send me back to my duties, inspired and refreshed. Considering all the work there was to do, as the test scores continued to come in, always a little higher than the psychometric bureau analysts estimated, the World Government Presidium did a wonderful job for the 2 years that it administered universal testing. There was a long period, 6 months, when the score seemed to have stabilized, with just about half of the testees scoring over 50 and half under 50. At that time, it was thought that if 40% of the mentally healthy were assigned to asylum staff work, the other 60% could keep up routine basic world functions, such as farming, power supply, transportation, etc. This proportion had to be reversed when they found that over 60% of the mentally healthy were volunteering for staff work in order to be with their loved ones in the asylums. There was some trouble, then, with the routine basic world functions functioning. However, even then, contingency plans were being made for the inclusion of farmlands, factories, power plants, etc., in the asylum territories, and the assignment of routine basic world functions work as rehabilitation therapy, so that the asylums could become totally self-supporting, if it became advisable. This was President Kim's special care, and he worked for it all through his term of office. Events proved the wisdom of his planning. He seemed such a nice, wise little man. I still remember the day when Dr. Speakey came into the office, and I knew at once that something was wrong. Not that he ever got really depressed or reacted with inopportune emotion, but it was as if the rubber balls in his shoes had gone just a little bit flat. There was the slightest tremor of true sorrow in his voice when he said, "Marianne, we've had a bit of bad news, I'm afraid." Then he smiled to reassure me, because he knew what a strain we were all working under, and certainly didn't want to give anybody a shock that might push their score up higher on the next quarterly test. "It's President Kim," he said, and I knew at once. I knew he didn't mean the president was ill or dead. "Over 50? I asked, and he just said quietly and sadly, "55. Poor little President Kim." working so efficiently all that 3 months, while mental ill health was growing in him. It was very sad, and also a useful warning. High-level consultations were begun at once, as soon as President Kim was committed, and a decision was made to administer the test monthly, instead of quarterly, to anyone in an executive position. Even before this decision, the universal scores had begun rising again. Dr. Spiekie was not distressed. He had already predicted that this rise was highly probable during the transition period to world sanity. As the number of the mentally healthy living outside the asylums grew fewer, the strain on them kept growing greater, and they became more liable to break down under it, just as poor President Kim had done. Later, when the rehabs began coming out of the asylums in ever-increasing numbers, this stress would decrease. Also, the crowding in the asylums would decrease, so that the staff would have more time to work on individually orientated therapy, and this would lead to a still more dramatic increase in the number of rehabs released. Finally, when the therapy process was completely perfected, including preventive therapy, there might be no asylums left in the world at all, because everybody will be either mentally healthy, or a rehab, or neo-normal, as Dr. Spiekie liked to call it. It was the trouble in the state of Australia that precipitated the government crisis. Some psychometric bureau officials accused the Australian evaluators of actually falsifying test returns. But that is impossible, since all the computers are linked to the World Government Central Computer Bank in Keokuk. Dr. Spiekie suspected that the Australian evaluators had been falsifying the test itself and insisted that they themselves all be tested immediately. Of course, he was right. It had been a conspiracy, and the suspiciously low Australian test scores had resulted from the use of a false test. Many of the conspirators tested higher than 80 when forced to take the genuine test. The state government in Canberra had been unforgivably lax. If they had just admitted it, everything would have been all right, but they got hysterical and moved the state government to a sheep station in Queensland and tried to withdraw from the world government. Dr. Spiekie said this was a typical mass psychosis, reality evasion, followed by fugue and autistic withdrawal. Unfortunately, the presidium seemed to be paralyzed. Australia seceded on the day before the president and presidium were due to take their monthly test, and probably they were afraid of overstraining their SQ with agonizing decisions. So the psychometric bureau volunteered to handle the episode. Dr. Spiekie himself flew on the plane with the H-bombs and helped to drop the information leaflets. He never lacked personal courage. When the Australian incident was over, it turned out that most of the presidium, including President Singh, had scored over 50, so the psychometric bureau took over their functions temporarily. Even on a long-term basis, this made good sense, since all the problems now facing the world government had to do with administering and evaluating the test, training the staff, and providing full self-sufficiency structuration to all asylums. What this meant in personal terms was that Dr. Spiekie, as chief of the Psychometric Bureau, was now interim president of the United States of the World. As his personal secretary, I was, I will admit it, just terribly proud of him. But he never let it go to his head. He was so modest. Sometimes he used to say to people, when he introduced me, "This is Marianne, my secretary," he'd say with a little twinkle. "If it wasn't for her, I'd have been scoring over 50 long ago." He truly appreciated efficiency and reliability. That's why we made such a good team, all those years we worked together. There were times, as the world SQ scores rose and rose, that I would become a little discouraged. Once the week's test figures came in on the readout, and the average score was 71, I said, "Doctor, there are moments I believe the whole world is going insane." But he said, "Look at it this way, Marianne. Look at those people in the asylums. 3.1 billion inmates now, and 1.8 billion staff. But look at them. What are they doing? They're pursuing their therapy, doing rehabilitation work on the farms and in the factories, and striving all the time, too, to help each other toward mental health. The preponderant inverse sanity quotient is certainly very high at the moment. They're mostly insane, yes, but you have to admire them. They are fighting for mental health. They will win through. And then he dropped his voice and said, as if to himself, gazing out the window and bouncing just a little on the balls of his feet, "If I didn't believe that, I couldn't go on." And I knew he was thinking of his wife. Mrs. Speakey had scored 88 on the very first American Universal test. She had been in the Greater Los Angeles Territory Asylum for years now. Anybody who still thinks Dr. Speakey wasn't sincere should think about that for a minute. He gave up everything for his belief. And even when the asylums were all running quite well, and the epidemics in South Africa and the famines in Texas and the Ukraine were under control, still the workload on Dr. Speakey never got any lighter, because every month the personnel of the psychometric bureau got smaller, since some of them always flunked their monthly test and were committed to Bethesda. I never could keep any of my secretarial staff any more for longer than a month or two. It was harder and harder to find replacements, too, because most sane young people volunteered for staff work in the asylums. Since life was much easier and more sociable inside the asylums than outside, everything so convenient and lots of friends and acquaintances, I used to positively envy those girls. But I knew where my job was. At least it was much less hectic here in the UN building, or the psychometry tower, as it has been renamed long ago. Often there wouldn't be anybody around the whole building all day long but Dr. Speakey and myself, and maybe Bill the janitor. Bill scored 32 regular as clockwork every quarter. All the restaurants were closed. In fact, most of Manhattan was closed. But we had fun picnicking in the old General Assembly Hall, and there was always the odd call from Buenos Aires or Reykjavik asking Dr. Speakey's advice as interim president about some problem, to break the silence. But last November 8th, I will never forget the date, when Dr. Speakey was dictating the referendum for world economic growth for the next 5-year period, he suddenly interrupted himself. "By the way, Marianne," he said, "how was your last score?" We had taken the test 2 days before, on the 6th. We always took the test, every first Monday. Dr. Speakey never would have dreamed of accepting himself from universal testing regulations. "I scored 12, I said, before I thought how strange it was of him to ask. Or not just to ask, because we often mentioned our scores to each other, but to ask then, in the middle of executing important world government business. "Wonderful," he said, shaking his head. "You're wonderful, Marianne. Down 2 from last month's test, aren't you?" "I'm always between 10 and 14, I said. "Nothing new about that, doctor." "Someday," he said, and his face took on the expression it had when he gave his great speech about the asylums, "someday this world of ours will be governed by men fit to govern it, men whose SQ score is 0. 0, Marianne." "Well, my goodness, doctor," I said jokingly. His intensity almost alarmed me a little. "Even you never scored lower than 3, and you haven't done that for a year or more now." He stared at me almost as if he didn't see me. It was quite uncanny. "Someday," he said in just the same way, "nobody in the world will have a quotient higher than 50. Someday, nobody in the world will have a quotient higher than 30, higher than 10. The therapy will be perfected. I was the only diagnostician, but the therapy will be perfected. The cure will be found someday." And he went on staring at me, and then he said, "Do you know what my score was on Monday?" 7, I guessed promptly. The last time he had told me his score, it had been 7. 92, he said. I laughed, because he seemed to be laughing. He had always had a puckish sense of humor that came out unexpectedly. But I thought we really should get back to the World Economic Growth Plan, so I said laughingly, "That really is a very bad joke, doctor." 92, he said. "And you don't believe me, Marianne, but that's because of the cantaloupe." I said, "What cantaloupe, doctor?" And that was when he jumped across his desk and began to try to bite through my jugular vein. I used a judo hold and shouted to Bill, the janitor. And when he came, I called a robo-ambulance to take Dr. Speakey to Bethesda Asylum. That was 6 months ago. I visit Dr. Speakey every Saturday. It is very sad. He is in the McLean area, which is the violent ward, and every time he sees me, he screams and foams. But I do not take it personally.
One should never take mental ill health personally.
When the therapy is perfected, he will be completely rehabilitated. Meanwhile, I just hold on here. Bill keeps the floors clean, and I run the world government. It really isn't as difficult as you might think.